It's time to talk that talk, and we talk it like no one else.
This is The Stinking Truth.
Now, here's your host, Mark Schlereth.
Hey, welcome into The Stinking Truth Podcast. We appreciate you guys being with us. Thank you so much for subscribing, watching the videos, all your comments. We're just growing like a weed, and it's all because of you guys. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Mark Schlereth alongside Mike Evans. Mike, how are you, buddy? It's draft day. I mean, we're going into the draft right now, so draft day upon us.
It's amazing. It's like Christmas morning for a lot of you. You woke up with an extra bounce in your step with it being draft day. And we're in Denver, where we have the defending NBA champions getting ready to play the Lakers tonight in game three after a remarkable game winner by Jamal Murray. We got a hockey team that just had a huge road win to even up their series at a game apiece. And yet what most people want to talk about is the NFL draft and what are the Broncos going to do? Are they going to pick a quarterback? It's the beauty of the draft, man.
It really is. The NFL has created this, they have captivated America with this draft. Just goes to show you the power of the National Football League, that draft ratings on television will dwarf NBA playoff games, NHL playoff games. It really is remarkable, man. And I think it's so cool. We'll do a huge draft breakdown of of the draft. Obviously, we'll do a huge breakdown on Monday after it all kind of pans out. But this is our pre-draft show, so we want to talk about, you know, the draft in general and things that we think should be coming down the pike.
So one thing is, as we get ready for this draft, there is an element of hit or miss, and there is an element of it's a crapshoot, because you're going to have over 250 players drafted in this draft. Let's face it, not even half of them are going to have good NFL careers. You're lucky to have maybe, 25, 30% of them will end up going on to have an average at best NFL career.
Well, like you're a starter, or you're a big time, you know, for a dozen years or 10 years, 8 years, 9 years, a great contributor on special teams, right? Like something of that nature. Yeah, there's a handful, 25%, 30%.
So this is interesting. ESPN producer Paul Hembo.
Yeah, Hembo.
He's one of Greeny's guys at ESPN.
He is Greeny's kind of research guy and stuff.
He put together the percentage of first-round picks that hit or miss, and this was the criteria, based on whether that player signed a second contract with the team that drafted them. I think that's a pretty good barometer. Here's what he found. The positions that hit the most, you're going to love this, offensive line, center, tackle, and guard. Center, 92% of the time hit, 60% for tackle, 50% for guard. The next group, linebackers, quarterbacks, edge rushers, defensive tackles, all in that 40 to 48% hit range. Mm-hmm. Again, getting a second contract with their second team. The ones that had the highest miss percentages, cornerbacks, running backs, safeties, tight ends, wide receivers, all ranging from cornerback at 38% to wide receiver being the biggest miss position at 27%. What do you make of those numbers?
Yeah, I think those numbers are interesting, and I think the criteria is interesting, because you're basing that on, do you sign a second contract with that team? And I think on the surface, you would look at that and say, okay, if they give him a second contract, then I think that that is probably, you know, a fairly good indicator. But I would think position by position, is it? Because, you know, we always talk about the value of particular positions. Like the value of a quarterback is higher than that of the value of a center, for instance. The value of an edge rusher is probably higher than the value of a defensive tackle or a middle linebacker. So I think you've got to be careful when you just put that criteria on there. So, for instance, off the top of my head, all right, guys that would fit into that category that Hembo put out there. Okay, so think about this. Jared Goff got a second contract with the Rams. Is that a hit for the Rams? Or did they get rid of him, bring in Matthew Stafford, so that they could hopefully go and win a Super Bowl, which is exactly what happened. Kyler Murray got a second contract with Arizona. And in that contract, they tried to put a study clause in there. Like, is that a contract they were just willingly skipping to the, you know, contract table and please ink it here? No, they put parameters in there. Daniel Jones got a second contract with the Giants. I mean.
So you're saying not all second contracts are created equal?
Dude, those are Eeyore contracts.
Eeyore?
Oh, yeah. Oh, don't pay any attention to me. Nobody ever does. You think the Giants wanted to sign Daniel Jones to a new contract? You think they were like, oh, man, we can't wait. This is our guy. Woo! No, they're like, oh, shit, we got nobody else. I mean, am I not?
So that's the Eeyore?
The we got Eeyore
nobody else,
oh,
nobody
God.
Other quarterback.
We had to nowhere to go and all day to get there. Might as well sign this turd. You know, I mean, isn't that how? Like, can you imagine behind closed doors? Can you imagine the conversations that went on with the Giants when they're like, oh, my God, this guy is up. We got to do something. Do we really want him? How many outs can we put in the contract? How do we get out of this damn thing? You know, that the whole contract is about, okay, how do we limit the damage so that we can get out of this because we know he's not our guy? Like, how many of those contracts get signed?
So it's
see,
like
the difference is if you are an edge rusher, and let's say you lead the league at or you're top five in the league at 12.5 sacks, but you know as a franchise that you fell into 7 of them because the rest of your defense is that good, and your contract is up and you're in line to make big money, like as a team, you don't want to sign that guy, right? So you let that guy leave because you're like, hey, man, he fell into these, and these other guys pushed the sacks to him, and we're not going to pay him because we know that he's not worth it. He's going to get paid because 12 sacks or 12.5 sacks, that production. So that would skew that number the opposite way, where the quarterback is, shit, we got nobody else. They all stink. The college quarterbacks fail at a 75% rate. What are we going to do? Well, we got to sign him, I guess. And that, like, that to me is the difference. So that whole quarterback thing, to be in there with edge rushers and who were the other guys? Edge rushers and
linebackers.
Yeah, linebackers. That to me is skewed up because you get a lot of those Eeyore contracts in there.
The Eeyore contract.
The Eeyore contract.
See, the way you describe it, it's almost like it's like the couple that stays together, even though they're not that happy, because neither one really wants to go back into the single world again.
Right.
So you're talking about teams that, like, I know my quarterback isn't the guy. I know we're not going to win a championship with him.
Right.
But compared to the uncertainty and the horror of trying to go back out there and find another quarterback,
right,
he doesn't look so bad.
Yeah, right? I mean, we'll dress him up. We'll build around him. We'll get him more weapons.
Yeah.
You know, he just needs
weapons. Get
him a new weapons.
Offensive coordinator.
We just need these wide receivers who bust at an epic rate. We'll just get him more weapons.
So you think the hit-miss rate on Hembo's chart is pretty accurate, all except for the quarterback, that 46% hit rate is inflated for all those reasons?
I just think that from a context standpoint, I just think there's got to be more to it. You know, this is where analytics fails us all the time, because you still have to use the eyeball test and some common sense when it comes to, you know, when it comes to how you're evaluating what is a success rate and what is unsuccessful. You know, so if you're looking at, you know, just the quarterback position in general, first round quarterback position in general. I mean, how many teams have a first rounder that they drafted that, you know, deep down inside they know doesn't pass the confetti test?
So what would be your message? I want you to look right into the camera. What would be your message to the 4 to 6 groups of fans out there that could come away with a first-round quarterback tonight based on the idea that we know that four will go in the first round. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy in no particular order, and then two other possible first-rounders in Bo Nix and Michael Penix. So let's say six quarterbacks go in the first round. What would be your message, look right in the camera, to the six fan bases that come away with a first-round quarterback tonight?
Your team is selling hope, and there is no hope. You suck. Just accept it. Now, I mean, my message would be you'll probably be right here 3 years from now going, I can't wait for the next quarterback and the next one. I mean, I say this all the time. There are 12 teams in the National Football League that want to win a world championship. The other 20 just want to increase their investment year over year. You'll grow their team by their 15 to 20% every year and leave a huge legacy for their family as that builds. I mean, look what's gone on the last couple of years. From when the Carolina Panthers sold just a few years ago, it was a $2 billion franchise. The Broncos just sold a year ago for what, $5 billion? I mean, it's just going to continue to escalate and climb. And a lot of those teams, there's a reason the Jets – or Arizona, or, you know, fill in the blank, are always drafting in the top, the Bears, always drafting in the top 10 because they suck. They suck at picking, and they think, you know, and they keep throwing out there this hope. Like, if we just get this guy, if we just get this guy, if we just draft Mitch Trubisky, if it's just, I just look at it like most of these quarterbacks are going to be failures. Because it's hard. And the college game doesn't translate to the NFL game, and it is hard at every position. And you never know what a guy's going to become. And, you know, there's an old saying is, the eye in the sky don't lie, the film doesn't lie. But evaluators lie to themselves because they put more merit on athletic skills than they do on what they see on film. And that's what ends up derailing organizations. But organizations are always going to go after, you know, overdraft and go after quarterbacks because it excites people. You know, we had on our radio
can
show.
Let me, because you and I read in my mind.
Okay.
This is where I wanted to go because I think to back up the whole hope idea, here's a great example. So we on our radio show, we had somebody text into us and said, if the Broncos take a cornerback – at 12.
Corner. Yeah.
The hill will be empty. So the Broncos at their practice facility for training camp, all the fans sit up on a grass hill. And it gives you a great view. And when the place is packed, there's probably about, you know, what, 3,500 people
well,
there?
Well, they used to be 5,000, 6,000 people, but the fire, Karen complained, like, what about my safety if there's some type of fire in the open grasslands?
All right. So let's
right?
say this.
So then the fire marshal came over, Fire Marshal Bill came over and say, "Now you're exactly right." So, you know.
Deep pull. Look it up.
Yeah. So anyhow, they ended up limiting it to 3,500. So you're welcome. You know, Karen, you know, Bronco fans, you're welcome because Karen complained.
It was either Karen or Todd or Chad.
Todd with one D.
Exactly. So, all right, let's say let's say you get 4,000 people on the hill.
Okay.
So the argument is that if you take a cornerback,
yes,
that there'll be no interest, no excitement, and the hill will be empty.
Yeah.
But if they take a quarterback at 12, then that hill will be packed. And that illustrates perfectly. They could pick a cornerback that probably statistically, odds-wise, will have a better chance of being a great player for the Broncos as compared to that quarterback. But what player will get the hill full?
Right.
There you go.
Yeah, they could take an offensive lineman who's got the greatest chance of signing that second contract and being a viable player for them for the next decade. And nobody will get – everybody will be like, wow, we blew the draft.
Right.
One of the things I love about the draft is the day after draft grades where they say, oh, this team knows what they're doing. They really hit here, you know, and then, you know, it'll just be like, hey, Aaron, let me just get, can I do this?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to read you a draft a pre-draft kind of perspective.
Ooh, like a scouting report.
Scouting report.
Oh, this is going to be fun.
Scouting report.
Okay.
And I want you to tell me who this draft pick is.
Okay.
All right. So here
Everyone
we go.
Play along at home. Here we go.
3-year starter, big, strong quarterback prospect with impressive dual threat skills. Showed marked improvement in each of his seasons, earning first team all conference. Has impressive quickness for a player his size. He's nimble in the pocket and easily slides or steps up to evade pressure with his great pocket awareness. He could pull the ball down and run for plus yardage if needed, and designed runs out of the pistol or shotgun are not a problem. He's fast and strong as a ball carrier. He's got great footwork with huge positives. Balanced, strong base, keeps his feet anchored underneath him. Always quick to throw and able to follow the ball, fire the ball at any time with little setup needed. Who is that?
I'm going to say, when you first started talking, I thought J.J. McCarthy or Drake May, but I'm going to go Drake May. Drake May.
That's a scouting report on Drake May.
Yes.
So you would say, based on that scouting report, that this guy is you know, got the potential to be a big time starter, a franchise type quarterback.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
That was Paxton Lynch.
Come on.
That was Paxton Lynch scouting report.
Come on.
From several years ago.
No way.
The Paxton Lynch scouting report. That's what I just gave you.
That dude was a bust.
As big a bust as you could possibly imagine.
Wow.
Here in Denver. But that's what we get enamored. Like, for instance, the Broncos just traded for Zach Wilson. And I came out and said something that became fairly controversial here in Denver. And I said, if he was in this draft, I would put him up talent-wise, arm talent and athleticism, as one of the top guys in this draft.
Sure.
One of the top guys in this draft.
Sure.
Now, I understand that Zach Wilson hasn't lived up to expectations, okay? He has not been very good. But there is no denying his athleticism, and there is no denying his arm talent. And he's played some decent games. But when you say Zach Wilson as the potential for Sean Payton as a starting quarterback, it is met with a wah, 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 wah. Guy can't play. Guy's awful. Guy shouldn't be in the league. There's no way he's better than Drake May. There's no way he's better than J.J. McCarthy. There's no way he's better than Bo Nix. Are you guys high? You're crazy. Jaden Daniels. There's no way. Look, he's gone through the growing pains. He's gone through the heartache. He's gone through the bad coaching. He's gone through all these things. Now, has he played well? No. Has he been garbage for the most part? Yeah. But I will tell you this now. I will tell you this. Talent-wise, he's as talented as every one of those quarterbacks. So what's going to happen? What's the differentiator? Well, the differentiator to the average draft fan is these guys are new. They're shining. They're coming out of college. They're going to be great. Until they're not. Now, does Zach Wilson have an opportunity to rectify his career here in Denver? Certainly he does. What's going to be the key factor in doing that? Well, the key factor is we always say this, and the NFL people hear, and you've heard this cliche all the time, that availability is the best ability. Bullshit. Responsibility. You know where, like, I don't know from a processing standpoint and all those things, you know, where Zach Wilson is. But if Zach Wilson takes responsibility for the shit show that has been his career so far and owns it and becomes a professional football player, and I always say it, just because you play a pro sport doesn't make you a professional. If he becomes a professional football player, from a talent standpoint, he's as talented as any of these guys in the draft right now, and he has the experience of getting beat down a bit. And so he's got as much, to me, upside as any of these guys do, maybe more. If he's willing to take the coaching and if he's willing to take responsibility for the issues he's had. Now, if he sits there and plays the victim and says, well, the Jets had different coordinators and I went into a system and, you know, the media was hard on me and blah, 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 blah. If he doesn't take responsibility for it, he's got no chance of being any good ever.
So I think the hope for Zach Wilson then is to, for him to receive the same kind of football rehab that Sam Darnold got with Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers.
Right.
So what do you think a Sean Payton can bring to Zach Wilson that could make that successful like it was with Kyle Shanahan and Sam Darnold?
Yeah, well, I think then it comes down to football nuance. And I think what you have to understand about just the nuance of football is how important it is to have a global perspective and to understand football in totality, not only as an offense, but what you're doing and how you're trying to attack the defense. So, for instance, I had a conversation with John Harbaugh. This is a couple years ago, but it resonated with me. He said, hasn't been a new passing concept in the NFL in 30 years. So every team in the league runs curl flat. Every team in the league, you know, runs a 3-by-1 slot fade. You know, every team in the league runs smash concept, you know, with a smash on the smash at number one and a seven behind it, right? Every team in the league runs that. You might call it different things. Every team in the league runs dagger. But here's the difference in nuance is how you're coaching it. Who's the first read in your progression? How you want to attack this concept versus cover one versus cover three versus, you know, hey, man, if we're getting cover four and the corner's bailing out, we got free access to the smash on the outside, right? Or, hey, man, if we're getting to cover two, man, we want that corner's going to roll up on the smash. Now we want to hit that seven and how you're coaching that up and all the different things that are going on in that. And then basically how you call plays. Do you understand how a coach can affect an offense or a player by the way that guy reads his quarterback's mind and the way that guy calls plays to set up other plays? I always say this, there's guys who call plays and then there's guys who call an offense. And when it starts to make sense and you're calling an offense, the pressure you can take off your quarterback and the creation of big explosive plays that have nothing to do with your ability as much as they have to do with how you've set the defense up. I always say this in pass protection, taking the passive out of pass protection. Like if I'm going to throw it 40 times, well, how can I eliminate to 10 dropbacks? How can I eliminate that? So do I throw three or four bubble screens? I throw three or four or five, you know, three-step drop game. I throw a couple run action, boot action out. So I'm going to throw another five of those. And then I throw another, you know, play pass where I have seven-man protections and we flag that, you know, that dive. And then we set up at 11 yards deep and we throw one over the top on a, you know, on a post over route. Then all of a sudden I have a five step with no hitch. And now all of a sudden I've taken that 40 attempts or 35 attempts and I whittled it down to about 10 where we have to hold up. And if we can't hold up in 10 because we've got all these other factors and all these other tools we've created, well, then we suck. But a good play caller does that for you so that you can take an average group and make them exceptional in the way you call plays. And that's what you have to do for your quarterback as well. And then there's some guys that just call plays. Let's just run this play. And they don't mesh together. They don't build. They don't marry together. And, you know, and those guys are the guys that are bad coaches. And there's tons of bad coaches in the National Football League.
We'll get to some questions from some great viewers. But real quick. So I guess if we're talking about six quarterbacks going in the first round, how would you break it down as to what's likely to happen? So, like, of the six, how many are likely to become stars? How many are likely to be serviceable starters?
Right.
And how many are going to be busts?
So I would go one star, one serviceable starter, and four busts.
Okay. I was thinking one star, maybe two serviceable starters. And by the way, when we say a serviceable starter, I mean, we're talking about somebody who's like the, you know, 28th best quarterback in the league, but he's starting, you know, that type of thing. So two of those, right. So, and then three.
Okay, I'll give you one star, one good starter, then two Eeyore starters.
Right.
Right. Or.
Yeah. And then two, and then two busts.
And then two busts.
Okay.
But it will, you know.
But one the odds are just only one special out of the six.
Yeah, out of the six QBs, there'll be one guy that's special, and the rest of them are guys.
Well, for the six groups of fan bases out there, spin the balls in the lottery balls, and I hope.
Yeah.
I hope you get the right one.
I
if there's only one, I hope you get the right one. But the other five of you,
and we'll see.
Well.
Yeah, the other five of you,
we'll see you next year.
We'll see you in 3 years.
See you in 3 years,
you
right.
You'll see you in 3 years,
exactly.
And you'll be excited
you'll
about
be doing
the
this
next
all
group
over
of
again.
Quarterbacks, right?
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's get to some questions. This is from Noah Stubel. Uh-huh. Noah asks, Mark, what do you think makes a good quarterback?
Guy's got to have command. And he's got to process information in the snap of a finger. So you've got to walk in with command of what you're doing. Because command exudes confidence to everybody else around you. And then you got to be able to make snap decisions. They got to be right. And then, you know, ultimately, timing and accuracy. And you can't have accuracy without timing. They go hand in hand. But what do we focus on? Again, this is the Sports Center highlight world that we live in. You know what we focus on? Arm talent, big arm. Guy's got a big arm. How many times have you heard that? Big arm. Playmaking ability.
Can make all the NFL throws.
Oh, all the NFL throws.
Or the other one, great legs.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Mobility.
Yeah.
Red flag that Jaden Daniels came out and said he wants to be the greatest running quarterback ever. He wants to pass, in his words, Michael Vick and Lamar Jackson is the greatest running quarterback of all time.
Yeah.
Boy, that would be a giant red flag for me.
Huge red flag.
I'd take him off my draft board.
I'm telling you, because ultimately what NFL teams are going to make you do, especially come playoff time, they're going to make you beat them from the pocket.
Yep.
And there's an old saying in the NFL, I've met a lot of good young running quarterbacks. I've never met a good old running quarterback. This is not Pac-12 defense. You're not going to face Washington State. And I know he finished up at LSU, but let me tell you what, these guys, they will try to rip your head off. That would be a giant red flag for me. Giant red flag.
Another one from D. Smith. He says, Mark, from a player's perspective, do NFL players talk amongst themselves, assuming teammates, about who to draft? Which is funny because you think about it, all you guys, even the most established of NFL veterans, there was a draft day for you. You went through the process.
Sure.
And it should never be that far from your memory, but yet once you become an established NFL player, do you kind of almost like, draft, who cares?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I think for the majority of us that are players in the NFL, we never talked about who the Broncos were going to, when I was here, Broncos or Washington, who they're going to draft. I'll tell you a quick story. So my second year, I started as a rookie. My second year, they took the Outland Trophy winner that year. Washington did. It's an offensive lineman. And I thought to myself, are you in? And, you know, he's projected tackle guard. And I thought to myself, are you kidding? They're already trying to replace me, right?
Yeah.
And then the guy came, and the guy became a decent player. But when he came into the league, man, the dude was as weak as a wet kitten. I was like, really? This is Outland Trophy winner? Like, and at that point of my life, I totally quit paying attention to the draft because my experience was most of the kids that get drafted can't play.
So you didn't worry about it?
Never even thought about it. Half the time, I didn't even know it was draft weekend. It just didn't resonate at all because the kids can't play. Most of them are just not ready. There's always a select few, you know, there's always the outliers that are just, they come in and I played with a guy you know, all the years that I played, there's 12 years, 12 drafts, not always a first rounder in those drafts. Sometimes it was a second rounder. But in all those drafts, there was one guy that I knew right off the bat that could play. Every other guy was a question mark. It was Al Wilson. Oof. He came in.
Linebacker, Tennessee.
Oh, man.
Oof.
I mean, you
want to
talk.
That guy was a bad man.
He was a bad.
And he was a man.
And right from the start, like, they tried to give the play calling duties as in rookie minicamp to a safety that was a veteran. And Al Wilson put his, had absolutely not. I'm the middle linebacker. I call these plays. Dude, he was large and in charge right off the bat. There's a couple guys that developed, you know, over the course of their rookie years. Guys like Trevor Price, a guy like John Mobley became a really good player early, really good player. But right off the bat, no way. I didn't recognize those guys.
Was it Mohamed Elowanbe? God bless
Look
you.
At you. Yeah, Mo Elowanbe.
Mo Elowanbe. That was the guy.
Mo Elowanbe.
And he went on to have a pretty good career.
Yeah,
huh?
He did. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, Elowanbe. That's how I used to remember his name.
Hey, folks.
Dude, can I tell you something?
It's on the internet. It's on the interwebs.
Can I tell
Easy
you something?
Easy to find. He was a third round pick, by the way.
Oh, his third runner?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I had that wrong. Speed reader.
Really?
Like he could read a book like this. There's a.
Come on.
I'm not kidding you.
Those people.
Dude, and
I'm both in awe of them and they freak me out.
So I once was watching him read, and I'm, you know me, I'm a slow dyslexic reader, right? I'm whispering every word. That's what I sound like when I like reading in bed. My wife was like, "Would you shut up?" You know? So I quizzed him.
So
I was
Reacher,
like,
Reacher took right. out the bad man in the.
Yes. Hit the bad man right where it hurts. So I took his book from him and I read a chapter. It took me forever. Plod along, right? I read the chapter. And I was like, okay, go. You read it. And like, it was less than 5 seconds a page. Done. I'm like, okay, what happened? He knew what happened. He was better than I did with all the characters and everything else. So I asked him about it, and he goes, "I'm not even aware of seeing words." He goes, "When I read a book, it's like I'm watching television."
Wow.
It just becomes, I just go through it, and it's like a motion picture that I'm actually watching. It's fascinating.
Huh.
The guy was also part vampire.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
I don't think he like not, you know, but he would go like the off season. He'd be like, "Oh yeah, I slept for 72 straight hours." I'm like, "What?" "Yeah, I'll just get into bed and I won't get out." I'm like, "What about?" "No, I don't even pee. I don't get out of like." Yeah, Mo was a good dude, man. I really like Mo, and he developed into a really good player for us. I don't know how long Mo played, but he developed into a really good player for us. But like right off the bat, I was like, "Wow!" And sorry, Mo. And then I was just like,
"Well, blame me. I was the one that went and looked it up." So
yeah.
Mark wanted to protect your anonymity, but I had to be a nosy.
But it was you know, it was what made me quit paying attention to the draft.
Yeah.
So anyhow.
Yeah. Well.
All right.
That said,
so here's
here
the
is.
Deal. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be back on Monday. We'll do a whole draft recap. We'll give you some of our grades, so you can look forward to that, because our grades, I promise you, will be different than what Mel Kiper and the rest of the draft guru idiots say. I love Mel, too. Look, I'm offending people right
I
and
know.
Left. I don't even mean to. I don't even mean
to. You just do it so effortlessly.
Yeah, Mel is my guy. But anyhow, we'll do all that when we come back on Monday. For everybody involved in the Stink Truth Podcast, we appreciate you guys. Thank you for your subscriptions. Thank you for following us. Thank you for sharing and all that stuff. We'll talk to you guys on Monday after the NFL draft.